Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So first up today, let's take a look at the business and the front pages stories that are making the morning papers. Joining me now in studio are Jackie King, who is the Executive Director with IBEC, and IBEC Global, should I say. Jackie, sorry to promote you there. And I'm also joined in studio by John Isle, who's Deputy Business Editor with the Sunday Times Ireland. Guys, look, we can't talk about anything without the election. And I want to start with Pat Leahy's piece, John, if I can, with you, on the front page of the Irish Times, because it kind of sums it all up, almost exasperated, and they're off, 3 weeks to shape the next 5 years.
That's right, yeah. The worst kept secret in politics, of course, is that the election was going to be held on November 29th, but we finally got the announcement now. What's interesting about Pat's preview here is that there's a very strong business focus, I think, in what the parties are promising. So what we've seen here at the top of the story is that Fine Gael is set to promise a reduction in the VAT rate for hospitality businesses to 11%. And then the other parties are sort of promoting these ideas of a kind of a business rebate, kind of cost pressure package, which is supposed to help businesses who've been struggling really since COVID, right? But the question I have about this is, where was this stuff in the budget? You know, when you had the opportunity to pull this lever, you didn't do it. Businesses, especially in hospitality, have been crying out for relief on VAT and other costs. And they've been, you know, they've been given sort of grants like the Power Up grant and stuff, which are difficult to apply for. And then different rebates on energy and costs and things like that, kind of overcomplicating the problem when what they really wanted was a tax cut. It seems like they're going to be promised that now. If that's enough to kind of pull the governing parties into a new coalition, you know, maybe that was the right move for them. But it strikes me as a little bit cynical to sort of bargain away. Sorry to bargain with something that you were being asked to do already when you had the power to do it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We might talk about that VAT issue later on, because I think Fine Gael have actually moved on that this morning. But Jackie, from that perspective, business, you're obviously representing business across Ireland. Seeing that in the campaign is important. Last year, if we were talking, I'd say the biggest political phrase that they would have been noticing is a cost of living crisis. Now the cost of business crisis is a big deal. Do you think that, or what do you see from what you've seen so far with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, they're responding to that?
Well, first of all, I think it's dangerous to call it a cost of living crisis. We've got a cost of living challenge, and a cost of business crisis is not quite there yet, but we could certainly see that coming down. But cost of business is substantial, and the complexity of doing business in Ireland, those are going to be two big pieces that we'll need to see change. I think the other thing that we'd certainly like to see is a move away from what has typically been complacency around how successful our economy is, and looking into the future and being a little bit more ambitious and focusing on our competitiveness in a lot of those areas. And that means sustaining the Irish business model, which is around tax, which is making a favorable environment for business to exist in.
One of the things when we talk about our competitiveness is and attracting new business, John, has featured more and more is the discussion around house prices as well, because that accommodation issue affects anyone who's trying to either do business here or locate here. There seems to be quite a bit across today's papers where they're again now bringing out new policies. What have you noticed?
Well, that's right. In the Irish Independent, there's a story by Fiona Sheehan and Tabitha Monaghan looking at whether the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael plans for housing will actually just turbocharge house prices, in fact, making the problem worse. And this has been a longstanding critique of the sort of housing subsidy approach that the past government used. It was their primary tool for dealing with the housing crisis. And so what they were doing, in effect, through various mechanisms like the First Home Scheme and the Help to Buy, is providing more financing for people so that they can afford the houses that are out there. Mm. What that has done is made secondhand homes very, very expensive, right? And it hasn't done a whole lot to increase the new supply that the country needs, obviously, to, let's say, stabilize the prices, because I don't think any government is going to look to reduce prices in housing, right? So even just to stabilize prices. Now, there are mechanisms that they're using on the other side to support developers, especially small developers, to get the kind of financing they need to do small-scale housing projects. and kind of increase the supply that way. Mm. But what we lack in the country is capacity, right? Mm. And it takes a long time to build that. So I'm afraid the solutions, there are no sort of fast solutions. And the short-term ones where you're helping people with the existing conditions, as the Irish Independent is pointing out today, you're gonna juice the prices a little bit more when you subsidize buyers. Now, if you're in receipt of that subsidy, you're going to like it, right? But if you're on the outside looking in where you can't quite get there yet and you see the prices running away from you, I think like this is an issue that whatever political party winds up in the next government or whatever parties wind up in the next government are going to have to look at this very carefully. Because just reflecting on the result in the U.S. election, I think a lot of the problem over there, obviously, is the cost of living or the cost of doing business or general high costs in the economy. And one of those high costs is housing. And it's been a persistent problem here for so long that the sort of there could be a surprise. And it just occurred to me when I was reading these articles that even though maybe people are counting out Sinn Féin at the moment because their support has gone down in the polls, we've seen from the polls in the U.S. that it doesn't necessarily measure what the result is going to be. And I just wonder if the anti-incumbent mood around things like housing, around things like cost pressures, is going to sort of deliver some kind of an electoral surprise this time.
Yeah, Jackie, that's a good point, isn't it? You know, a campaign is very dynamic. The unknown unknowns that we have now, anything can kind of pop up. But do you think that issue of housing and that this particular partnership of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who will be trying to look at the record that they have achieved over the last number of years, is ingrained that they haven't gotten on top of it? Or do you think that there's still the possibility that this issue of supply that John has mentioned here could be something that if they actually come up with policies, people respond to?
Yeah, I mean, it will play large. And even we've been going across the country talking to businesses and housing is top of mind for them in terms of recruiting and bringing people in on talent. But I think, you know, if you look at the performance of where the government is in building houses, the stacks and the facts support that there is improvement. However, people don't feel that. This is an emotional issue. So policies that come out that are practical, you know, that makes sense to the voter where they live, you know, getting their 30-year-old kids out of their houses, that's where it's going to matter. And if you can play on that emotion, that could
and as you mentioned, you know, there, Jackie, like the manner in which you do business here, the bureaucracy around it all. Yeah. I mean, that's something certainly they could challenge. Look, one of the other things that emerged in the papers is it was a scoop at the time by Paul Hosford, John, the hospitality VAT cut to 11% in a bid to woo business, which has already happened this morning. Fine Gael have announced it. What's your perspective on this?
Well, like I said there at the top of the show, you've had hospitality businesses especially have been sounding the alarm on this for at least a year. And there was an opportunity in Budget 24 and an opportunity in Budget 25 or at any point in between those points to do something about the VAT. You had the restaurants out, you had the hotels out, everybody saying, you know, this is what we need. The costs have gone up enormously. And it's not just the cost of VAT. It's the cost of minimum wage. It's the increased employers' PRSI. It's the cost of raw materials, basic goods, all of those kinds of things. So profit margins, especially in hospitality, have just shrunk massively. And you have a lot of businesses that appear busy are just barely keeping their heads above water. You have a lot that are closing. This is pubs, this is restaurants, this is B&Bs. It's kind of all over the country, right? And so this is a step in the right direction. But I just ask myself about the dozens, if not hundreds of businesses that could have done with this a year ago. And might that not have redounded to the benefit of the governing parties if they had done it before?
Do you think that this is a bit of sharp practice on their part then, that they didn't do it in the budget, that there was this expectation building up from some quarters that they might do it, and that maybe they saved it for the election?
Well, I think, yes, it does look like they saved it for the election, but I also don't want to downplay how difficult it is maybe to get things through a coalition cabinet, right? Mm. I think there's a bit of tension between the Department of Enterprise and the Department of Finance in terms of...
On this issue.
On this issue and several issues about, you know, there's a kind of obviously a sort of a pro-enterprise bias in the Department of Enterprise. They want to see businesses thrive and be profitable. Department of Finance is much more focused on the tax take and the
it's costly,
you know,
as well to do something like
so
this.
So you cut VAT, it costs money and you have to find that money elsewhere or you have to reduce spending in in other parts. And so,
and you have to find it every year.
And you have to find it every year. And you have to look around at your other cabinet colleagues and sort of who's up and who's down in those situations. I don't discount how difficult it might be to get through that kind of that kind of a policy. But at the same time, you know, if you're someone who had to close their restaurant, or you're someone who lost their job because the business you work for had to fire people, I don't think you care too much about that. And I think you're going to feel a little bit abused by that change, in policy that maybe looks a little too late.
Mm. But at the same time, if they're promising it now and there's hope, you know, it's the hope that kills you in the end, isn't it? Like, you never know what is going to come up in an election. So we're just going to have to monitor that. But I definitely think from the early signs, it's certainly seeming to me that Fine Gael are hard out on pro-business messaging. Jackie, we're going to turn to the States now. One good thing about the Irish election was it gave us a little bit of respite from the US presidential campaign. And one of the pieces I think you've been looking at was a piece in the Irish Independent today by Katrina Perry, who is now, of course, a presenter with the BBC. What's she saying?
Well, it's all about Ireland getting, you know, where we're going to fall in terms of trade and how we're looking at where people are voting. And I think if we've learned a couple of things from the election in you know, and she's talking about all flash and sizzle from the Democrats versus you know, getting down to the worker. And I think that's where Trump nailed it in this campaign. He really secured a decisive win from across geographies, from, you know, even in the swing states, even across demographics. Demographic minorities that weren't necessarily looking to vote in his favor in the first place, but bringing in you know, the celebrities and not focusing on the worker and bringing it down to kitchen table issues was a huge miss from the Democrats' perspective.
Yeah, and then another piece in the papers today is by Cliff Taylor, John. It is about that very point that Jackie was making there. You know, in terms of our interest in this. Return of Donald Trump to the White House. It is, will we be caught in a monumental geopolitical trade war? What do you think? And what's he saying?
Yeah, I think it's a typically astute piece by Cliff today. And I think he's exactly right. He says Trump may force Ireland to take sides. And if this happens, Ireland will ultimately have to side with Europe, despite the large U.S. investment here. I think it's a tension that we are going to have to live with for, at the very least, the next 4 years, but probably for a good bit longer. So the model that Ireland has pursued of attracting large-scale U.S. investment from the likes of Google and Facebook and Amazon and the pharmaceutical industry is going to come under a lot of pressure. Trump hasn't been shy about saying he wants to bring manufacturing, business, corporate taxes, all of those things. He wants to reshore that back to the U.S. He doesn't believe in globalization. He is not a free trade Republican. He is a protectionist Republican, right? And they have the economic power and the political momentum to make the next few years very painful for Ireland. And what Cliff is basically pointing out is we are part of a political entity, the EU, that more or less sort of guarantees our place in the world, but our economic livelihood depends on the U.S., and we need to make some hard choices. And among those are, do we change the FDI business model? How do we market ourselves to American companies? How do we stay on Trump's good side so that Ireland isn't in the firing line, right? We'd much prefer him to look at tariffs on car makers rather than, say, tariffs on food producers or pharmaceuticals. And then on the other hand, we have to balance that with our political interests in Europe. And there are decisions that have to be made in Brussels that Ireland won't be exclusively in charge of, and we're just going to have to live with them. I see this unfolding in ways that will be very uncomfortable, I think, for this country. And looking at what happened with Brexit in 2016 makes me quite nervous, because if Ireland, through no fault of its own, winds up seeing its GDP affected, and Cliff points to a study by Oxford Economics that says we could lose 4% of GDP in the next 4 years
as a result of this. Worst affected
like
in Europe.
That's painful.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
painful. And if that happens, what happens then is you get political pressure here. Well, what are we going to do about it? Do we want to hitch our wagon to the Americans? And if we need to hitch our wagon to the Americans, do we get out of the EU to do it, right? Mm-hmm. That's maybe catastrophizing a little bit, but what's happening, it's going to happen, right? It's
so
not.
It could, you're saying in the very long term, it could actually cause us very fundamental questions.
Absolutely.
Beyond economic policies.
And the flip side of that, and this relates to the VAT bit, right? And maybe Fine Gael has woken up belatedly to the sort of underappreciation of the challenges in the domestic and indigenous economy, where we've become so reliant on corporate tax that really is generated somewhere else, right? Like, let's not lie to ourselves about where this money comes from, while neglecting the development of our own secure domestic indigenous industrial and economic base. We haven't done that. We've wasted our time in the last 5 years, or at least since 2016 when Trump was first in office. And now we're stuck with a kind of a weakened, very like cost-pressured domestic economy where the indigenous businesses are all really struggling. They're not generating huge profits. There are exceptions here. There are big, successful Irish companies. But I'm talking about the kind of bread-and-butter businesses, family-owned businesses, businesses that are struggling to scale. We don't have that really to fall back on. It's much smaller in terms of like the tax take. And it's not just corporate tax. It's income taxes and VAT also, which are generated by this multinational sector. Mm. Like, it's great, but at the same time, it's a vulnerability.
Jackie, we've been complacent and we're not prepared for this type of challenge. What say you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with a lot of what John said, and I really do like Cliff's piece. But what I like is what he concludes in the end, which is essentially that, you know, the whole article talks about scenario planning and what ifs and reacting. I think that what we need to do and what Europe needs to do is stop waiting and seeing what the US is going to do. And we need to control our own destiny.
Well, it was funny yesterday. Sorry to interrupt you. It was funny yesterday. I mean, IBEC Global, I know you operate a lot in Brussels, but watching Ursula von der Leyen and Mario Draghi, like, they weren't very subtle in their pivot toward let's buy American LNG really quickly and their renunciation of this, re-announcing the competitiveness package, which they say is going to be like $800 billion required to maintain competitiveness.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be required. But then the reality sinks in is where is that money going to come from? How are you going to spend it? And we have that problem in Ireland. We have lots of money. Mm. How are we going to spend it? You know, throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping something sticks. We have to be more targeted and focus on things like sustainability in our tax model and, you know, things like energy security and prices, our labor costs, keeping that in control and making sure that's competitive here. Innovation is going to be key and skills of the future. How are we preparing for that? And that's going to be important to Ireland, but it's also going to be important to Europe. We've been outsourcing things like defense and security, for example, as a EU bloc to the US for far too long. So when are we going to start controlling our own destiny?
So sort of nearshoring ourselves, really.
Mm. Well, you know, I don't want to get into that kind of language because that speaks, you know, to something that we don't want to see, which is a reversal of globalization. We are a small open economy. So how do we keep those open trade flows? But when you think about even in Ireland now, you know, the fact that we couldn't get a CETA agreement through, that's a problem. But in the EU overall, how are we going to stop just acting like a peace project and start acting like a significant economic and trading bloc that we actually are?
Well, one of the challenges in this new Donald Trump environment and the new global situation is selling ourselves abroad, you know, to the FDI. And we spotted another interesting story here, I think, in the Irish Independent by Ken Fox today. IDA Ireland needed 428,000 rebranding to end confusion. Jackie, what did you make of this?
Well, first
what did they say? First of all, excuse me, maybe well, just take us through a little
bit
of what.
So basically the review says that the state agency was often mistaken for other groups and there's brand dilution.
Well, one that really intrigued me was a dental association that
yeah.
they were mistaken for from time to time.
Yeah, and you know, our teeth matter, but not as much to Ireland as IDA does. But look, I think the rebrand is needed. Not just for IDA, the organization, but if we're going to look at a rebrand for IDA, the organization, we need to look at it in the context of how are we branding Ireland going forward as an innovative, forward-looking country that has significant influence in the EU and selling Ireland. I don't think a new logo is going to matter if we don't execute on the brand promise here.
This is one of those stories, John, isn't it? When people see it, they go $500,000 on a rebrand and a logo, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Well, At the risk of lecturing people who get upset about that, I'll just say that a brand is a lot more than just a logo. A brand is how you relate to your audience in yeah. all aspects, both, you know, your visual ways, how you talk, your tone of voice, and just how you present yourself to the world. And Ireland, as Jackie points out, is a small open economy that really has to market itself around the world. You know, it's not like Germany, where the products do the talking, you know, great engineering, and you just associate that with Germany, exactly. right? It's not like that, right? So, yes, I know a lot of people will focus on that. It's similar to the, you know, the bike shed at Leinster House. Oh, I can't believe we spent all this money. But branding is worthwhile. If you get it right, the returns are considerable. If you get it wrong, you're gonna just lose, and you'll wish you had that $428,000 to spend on a rebrand. So, really, what this is, I think, is about brand drift. That the language, the tone of voice, the assets behind the brand were no longer appropriate to the contemporary situation. And to the IDA's credit, like, they went off and asked somebody, how do we fix this,
yeah.
right? And it's the right thing to do.
And so many people just start changing things without figuring out what's wrong. And look, it's a very crowded market. It's noisy out there. And brand does matter. And it's becoming harder and harder. So, look, for our final piece in the papers today, one of the issues in the campaign over in the US was the price of eggs. And now we've gone completely full circle on this one. It's the age old answer to which came first. And they finally cracked it. And I'm sorry for that. John, tell us about this story.
Well,
sorry.
If I can just summarize, some scientists at the university, Geneva University in Switzerland, you know, have basically found that they found an old fossil, a billion-year-old fossil in Hawaii, which essentially showed that single-cell organisms, when they began to develop more complexity, developed all of the components for genetic reproduction within themselves.
Which came first?
It was the egg, I'm here to tell you. But it wasn't the sort of egg that you crack, you know, into your pan in the morning. It was something much more prehistoric than that. So I don't think the question has actually been fully answered.
There you go. There's an inconclusive answer to that age-old question then. I'm afraid, folks, we've run out of time, and for now we're going to have to leave that there. But my thanks to Jackie King, the Executive Director with IBEC Global, and also to John Isle, who is Deputy Business Editor with the Sunday Times.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello!
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So it could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.